Hey beautiful people. Welcome back to A Slice of Life with me, Jack Walton. A space where each month I'm joined by inspiring guests with interesting stories to tell. We cover a wide range of topics from mental health to success. Each episode has a motivational takeaway that will leave you longing for more. Don't forget to follow me on social media. I am Jack Walton, a motivator boy, to keep up to date with everything I've got going on. And please rate, share and subscribe wherever you get your episodes downloaded from. Enjoy the show. Hey everybody, we are back. It's season three. I'm so excited to be here. The last time I spoke to you guys, it was season two at the end, and that was in June. I was still recording in lockdown then. I was still getting to grips with it all. The good news is, obviously it's now the autumn, although I am still recording from home. That's literally just because I've kind of fallen in love with the recording process remotely. It's a lot easier for me. I don't have to go to a studio. I've also invested in a bit of a better quality microphone. So hopefully for my end, you'll hear a bit of a better quality sound. I've also got a new editor named Callan. So Callan is editing the episodes for this season, which is really cool. And yeah, thank you so much for joining me. So the first episode of the season, I am joined by an absolutely remarkable person. So I am joined by James Elliott, and James Elliott is a mental resilience performance coach. He was in the British Army for 15 years. He served all over the world. He now does training. He trains soldiers still, rugby players, pro athletes, Paralympians, all about how they can condition their mindset to literally be their very best self and to get the most out of their career and their personal lives, really. So he now does coaching. He left the army in 2018, and obviously he's now doing his thing, and it's absolutely awesome. In the episode, we spoke very briefly because we had a really busy schedule that day. So about 35 minutes worth of content for this episode. And we spoke all about mental resilience. We spoke about mindset. We also spoke a bit about how the army benefited him and the lessons he learned from that. So so much was crammed into that time. It was absolutely, honestly, I hardly spoke because I was just kind of in awe listening to him. I was like, wow, this guy is incredible. He's another level, seriously. And yeah, over to the episode. Like, I really hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much for joining me, and enjoy the show. James Elliott, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me on, Jack. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm really good. So we met, didn't we, through Instagram.
Yeah.
I think I saw, actually, I know why it was. It was through the Hardman Academy. I absolutely adore them.
Yeah.
So I went to one of their events in London in February, and I followed their like podcasts and stuff, and I'm sure I saw you on it.
I did quite a bit for them. Yeah, I did a bit for the Holman Academy. Yeah, just talking about sort of male mental health and the sort of psychology. Yeah,
amazing. Shout out to Anthony. I love Anthony. He's a really good friend of mine, actually. So yeah, love him.
Nice.
Amazing we've connected. So the first question I always ask everybody on the show is one that a lot of people get really confused about. It's a really simple question, but a lot of people are like, oh, how do I answer it?
Okay.
It's a really good intro. So James, who are you? Like, who is James Elliott? Who are you? What do you do? And yeah, a bit about you, really.
Okay, so my name is James Elliott. I am a mental resilience and performance coach.
Nice.
Which is a fancy sounding title for effectively somebody who is on a daily basis repeating the scene from Cool Runnings, where he takes him into the bathroom and he shouts, "I see pride, I see power."
Yeah.
I do that on a daily basis, yeah. So I was born in 1988 and had a very rough, sort of robust childhood and upbringing, right, which sort of made me run away and join the army in 2006. Had I realized that there was a war on, I probably wouldn't have done it, but I joined the army, went to the sort of British elite airborne forces and joined the regiment 7 Power RHA and went to the 3 Power Battle Group.
Wow.
From there, I've served nearly 15 years in the airborne forces now, but I did sort of 10 years in the 3 Power Battle Group, including operational service and a lot of time away and special forces selection. And yeah, effectively, I came back 2015, had a lot of mental health issues and took a bit of time out and got into coaching, did some strength conditioning coaching at a national league rugby team, wound up employing me to do some strength conditioning coaching. I was still employed by the army, but I was using this to sort of recenter myself, got really into coaching. And then in 2016, the RAF turned around to the army and said, we can no longer man the amount that you need for parachuting. So you're going to have to cut the amount of parachuting that you're doing. And 16 Air Assault Brigade, the Airborne Forces, went, no, we're going to handpick some guys. We're going to send them down to do your tactical parachuting instructors course. And they're going to become the British Army's first ever ones. And I was one of the guys picked out of the brigade. There were eight of us. So I went down and became part of the British Army's first ever sort of tactical parachuting instructors platoon. And I did that. And whilst I was there, I decided that because of the mental health journey I've been on, I wanted to do some instructors courses because I wanted to find out better what had gone on with me and how I can help others. And I did a lot of mental health instructors courses, including suicide prevention, suicide awareness, conversations with vulnerable people, grief counseling. And I then really got into sort of speaking to lads about this, but in a sort of professional military way and almost in a tactical way, where I'm teaching anxiety regulation and emotional control to young soldiers before they begin their sort of parachuting. Was noticing a marked improvement in performance by going through breathing techniques and going through focusing techniques. And then I wound up writing off to Army HQ and saying, look, I've got this idea. Why don't we, rather than doing it how we've been doing it with mental health, do mental well-being and performance optimization training by doing peer-to-peer support? So soldiers teaching soldiers, rather than waiting to see doctors and nurses, actually doing preventative measures. And they went, that's a great idea. Come on, kid. So they pulled me out of Army HQ and I became the second in command of all the British Army's mental resilience training delivery. So
that's
I was deployed to Estonia. I went and worked with special forces. I went and worked in every sort of unit you can think of. I was delivering and doing all this coaching. I qualified in sports psychology, and then I qualified as a level 5 in effective coaching and mentoring. And then I've got back today. One of my sort of last, I've got a last couple to come back, but one of my last ones of my advanced psychologist course. My last assignment.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
So, yeah, and so then I left the army in January this year, and I'd set up my own company, and now I work with Paralympians, I work with rugby players and footballers and boxers, I work a lot with veterans, helping them. I write articles, I write blogs. I
love that.
I do a little bit of the TA thing every now and then, to the reserves, so sort of a weekend a month maybe, or a couple of days a month, I go and I do some work with the very sort of prestigious 4 Para, which is a really good unit to be a part of. I do a bit of work with them, just sort of the soldiering and a little bit of the parachuting instruction and the physical training side of it, just to sort of keep my hand in as a soldier. I do a lot of this kind of stuff. I do a lot of talking with people. I do a lot of, coach mental resilience, but I perform mental resilience. So it's important that people see that I am mentally resilient. So on the weekend, I broke two more world records.
I saw it on Instagram, yeah.
Yeah, so did the world record for most amount bench press by a group of 12 in an hour, which we did 178,000 kilograms, I think it was.
Oh my God.
And then a group of 12 for the deadlift in an hour, in which it was 290,000 kilograms or something, I think it was in the end.
That's crazy. And you already have a few Guinness World Records under your belt as well, don't you?
Yeah, so those two ones there aren't Guinness World Records yet, so we've got to go back to hear from that. But I have got two official Guinness World Records as well, where I've got the Guinness World Record for the longest game of rugby sevens, where I played part of the team that I'm with, which is a wonderful team of great guys. We played rugby sevens for 24 and a half hours straight, and then we did the same again a year later, so that win rugby tens. So that's full contact rugby for 24 and a half hours.
How did you do that?
We just got a group of like-minded individuals together who are all a bit nuts. It was all for charity, and and we got on with it.
I mean, that is incredible though, isn't it? I love that. Oh my God. I feel like a better question would literally be, what don't you do? Because you've given me so much.
Yeah.
You seem to, like, you've done a lot in quite a short space of time, I guess, haven't you really?
I understood from a very young age that life is very fragile. And I didn't want to lead a certain life. So I don't know. I think the piece of advice I always give anyone particularly to young soldiers. I still get a lot of young recruits approach me. The piece of advice I give all of them is commit to every opportunity. Like, don't let an opportunity slide you by because you're too idle or because you're distracted or because you can find a reason to not do it. If you're like, you know, I mean, this is as a young recruit, if there's an opportunity to join a boxing team, then join a boxing team. I've never boxed before. It doesn't matter. Go and do it. Like, join a rugby team. Oh, I don't know how to play rugby. It doesn't matter. Oh, there's an opportunity to go in this course or that course. And then if you just take that out of the military environment and you put that into the civilian one, where rather than seeing it in the military sense, but if you think, oh, there's an opportunity to go to a fitness expo and attempt a world record. Oh, I don't know if I can do it. Go and do it. It's a bit of a drive. Well, get in your car early then. You know, like, don't miss opportunities. Don't find excuses to not do it. Because we all know what right and wrong is. We know what right and wrong decisions are. You know, if there's an opportunity to go to a fitness expo and try and break a world record, then you should absolutely do it. And, you know, there's an opportunity to go to a music festival, go to a gig. If there's an opportunity to do a course, there's an opportunity to showcase who and what you are and your talents, and you should seize that. And you should seize every opportunity
to commit to it. I feel like that's great advice, though, for anybody, not just like recruits. That's just really good advice to live by, isn't it, really?
Yeah, commit to the things that you want, or you simply will not get them. Or at least you won't have the fulfillment from them because you'll half-ass it.
Yeah, and we love to make excuses, naturally, don't we? We love to, like, put obstacles in our way if they aren't there. I mean, I've certainly done that in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we solidify a lot of negative beliefs. If you sort of imagine it as building a brick wall, you've got this negative belief, and that's a brick. Your negative belief that, oh, I can't, say, for example, put it into context of the weekend. Someone saying, oh, I can't break a world record. You know, I wouldn't be strong enough. I wouldn't be particularly helpful, right? So that's their negative belief. That's a brick. And then that's cemented in place by the actions that they choose to take. So they choose to not go to the fitness expo, and therefore they've chosen to not do the world record, and therefore that they don't get the world record. And all that has then done is surrounded that brick with cement and solidified it in place. Mm. It solidifies their belief that they can't do it because they didn't do it. We find it all the time. We have this belief, and then we then apply a certain behaviors to emphasize, to solidify, to brick that in place. We find it all the time. Like, if you understand that if you have a negative belief, then that's most of the time, most negative beliefs are built upon someone else's perspective or opinion of you that you've then adopted.
So actually,
if you can assess the source of your negative attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs, then you can rectify them. You can uncement them from yourself.
That is so true. And a lot of people don't actually realize that they can do that. I feel like a lot of the time people feel powerless when it comes to that, but actually, like you say, anything can be changed. Like, anything can be unlearned, can't it?
No, anything can be learned can be unlearned.
Yeah.
You know, like, I see people do 180 degree turns on their opinion of themselves and their opinion on their politics, on their opinions on racism, on sexuality, on gender, on any manner of things. People's behaviors, attitudes, behaviors, beliefs can be changed. To do that, you have to first of all create what's called cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is where a person disagrees with their own attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs. And that's difficult to achieve, cognitive dissonance. It's hard to make because people will make excuses for themselves. Like, you see some amazing things. For example, like a much older generation with a racist opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got this racist opinion. They see a crime being committed on TV, right? And the crime on TV, even if it's been a drama, this is how much people, you know, on a fantasy drama, how much people will generate their own cement. But they will, you know, see a crime being committed on TV and identify the person as coloured, and that will cement that racist view in place.
Yeah,
see,
you're right.
A crime was committed, so this is, I like, they're racist. People of colour hold less worth than me. And therefore, they then cement that view into place by seeing crime and then just associating that. You know, like when we see these really negative headlines where it says, a Muslim man or a black man. But when it's a white man, it's never written that it's a white man. It's just a man committing a crime, right? So we see this also. That just solidifies people's racist views. And then when you challenge them, their cognitive dissonance is they're so unable to get there. They will come up with any manner of excuses. You know, they say, oh, it's not my fault. It was the way I was raised. That's a generational idea. And like, I see that all the time. Like, that's probably one of the most common ones. Like, it's not my fault. It's how I was raised. It's not my fault. I was too naive to it. It's not my fault. that's how my parents raised me, all that kind of stuff. And that's, people would use that to avoid that cognitive dissonance. Just look inwardly and go, actually, do you know what? I disagree with myself there. I shouldn't have done that. Yeah, and so they will do whatever they can to avoid that cognitive dissonance. Now, if you can create cognitive dissonance, which sometimes is done by communicative theory, but actually the best way of creating cognitive dissonance is by role model. So if you get role models behaving in a certain way, you see somebody like doing really, really well, somebody thriving, somebody, you know, being really kind and compassionate, and they're a person of color, then this racist view begins to then get edged away, because then they start actually looking inwardly and going, actually, maybe my attitude, behavior, and belief, my negative attitude, behavior, and belief was wrong.
100%.
We see it all the time. I was told, for example, that the only way I would ever get to a university was to clean the toilets. That was something that my mom used to say that to me, right? So now I'm doing all this education. So it from sort of first started like years ago, in like, I didn't want to read a book. I hadn't read a book in 10 years easily.
Wow.
And I didn't want to, but then this cognitive dissonance happened because I want to study mental health. I want to be there more for the lads. I want to do more for the lads. Okay, cool. Go on this course, go on this course, go on this course. Here's this book. Here's this textbook that's going to help you with the next course. You're going to have to read it. And then you've got to face your fear. Then you've got to sit there and go, right, I have to do this. Like, this cognitive dissonance is being created. I know that I'm not very academically intelligent, and I know that I'm going to really struggle with this, but actually I want to do this. So now I'm challenging that attitude, behavior, and belief. I'm going, do you know what? I'm going to study. I'm going to learn. Next thing you know, I am studying. I am learning. I do get a paperback, and it has got pass written on it. And, you know, the first one was only ever going to be a pass. It wasn't going to be a distinction. But the first one comes back, and it's a pass. And you go, hang on a minute. Like, I can do this.
Exactly,
and now this cognitive dissonance happens. Now I'm looking inwardly. Now I'm challenging that attitude, behavior, and belief that has simply been given to me by something that was repetitively told to me growing up. Now I'm going, actually, maybe I can fucking study. Maybe I can read.
Yes.
Maybe I can learn. And now, you know, today I got one of my assignments back, which was about abnormative psychological behaviors. And I got a distinction on it.
Oh, well done. That's amazing.
Thanks. And that's an advanced psychologist course. So this belief, actually, that I can't do it has been smashed. I know that I can do it. I know that it's harder for me because I'm not particularly academic, but that's fine. Because I know that I can work harder than everybody else. So I know my work rate. I know what I have to do, and therefore I can do that. So that's what cognitive dissonance is. So to sort of bring it sort of full circle to where we are, where people miss out on opportunities and people miss out on moments in their life because they've got this brick wall that they've built in front of them now, this whole plethora of negative attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs that they've cemented in place by behaviors that they think reinforce it. And actually, all you have to do is get them to look closely at the brick and look closely at what they cemented it with. And then that wall is very easily dismantled.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, I feel like we could spend like 10 hours speaking about just that. It's so fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible.
And I think when you actually, when you hear it broken down like that and you actually realize it's crazy because you can identify it with yourself and how you've done that before and like, just listening to it, it's really, really interesting about why do we actually do what we do. And I feel like it just comes down to a lot of the time we really get in our own way. We love to get in our own way. And when you kind of realize that, it's...
There's a lot of like, really fascinating psychological approaches to it. That what I've done there is, what I spoke to you about there is about four different theories. It's like a social learning theory, like a bit conditioning, an Adleristic psychology, but I mean, I'm a big fan of this guy Adler, but there's loads of different ones. So like Freud, everyone's heard of Freud. Oedipus theory to penis envy. Like we all know about Freud, and Freud was very much like, you are a product of your trauma and your upbringing. So whatever happened, like you're, but I don't really like that because for me, Freud makes too many excuses for behavior. And then when you actually examine Freud as an individual, you realize that actually he was a bit of a loser. And so he's saying these things potentially to sort of just justify his own behaviors. But Freud will say, it's not your fault, it's your trauma. We look at psychodynamic theories, sort of like psychodynamic sexuality theories. And then he'll look at your dreams, do sort of a lot of dream analysis. But he basically like big fan of the subconscious, and he'll say everything is sort of manageable, explicable by your trauma as a child. Whilst he had a friend at the time called Adler. Now Adler was the opposite in a way, where he said, do you know what, childhood trauma is definitely an influence on behavior. but everything is choice.
I totally agree.
So then that to me then buys, so that's what's called a humanist approach. So humanist is basically everything is choice. There's right. lots of different ones, but for me, there are lots of influences. So there's like conditioned behavior. So the way that we sort of behave, like we see that in a society all the time. Like we all have, for example, cultural norms.
Yeah.
You know, like giving someone the thumbs up in the UK is a sign of like, I'm okay. But I think like the thumbs up in like Brazil or the okay sign is considered really offensive. Like they're cultural norms that condition our behavior, right? So we know what is and isn't acceptable. And we behave in a certain way to fit that, which again ties into social learning theory, that social learning theory, we will adopt the attitudes, behaviors, and belief of the people that we spend the most amount of time with.
I've heard that one, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, you know, to boil it down even further, and it is a very much an oversimplification, but there is an argument that you are the product of the five people you spend the most amount of time with.
Yeah, I hear that often, that one, yeah.
Right, so again, yes, there is a slight validity to that. But yeah, then there's genetic influence as well. So, you know, like you do inherit genetic traits from your parents, both psychological and physiological. So you will, you know, if your mum's a professor at Oxford University and your dad's a professor at Cambridge University, chances are you're going to be very academically gifted.
Yeah.
So that is still a condition of behavior, a genetically inherited trait that you inherit that. Again, there's then inherited beliefs, attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs, which is still part of upbringing, but conditioned into you as a child. Again, you inherit that from your mum and dad. If your dad is a racist football hooligan, there is a chance that you will be one as well. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense.
There's other influences on behavior. Trauma is an influence on behavior. Obviously, all of our previous experiences are influences on behavior. But I would always say that everything at the end of the day is still choice. And people say, what if he doesn't know any better? But we still know, you know what morality is. You know what the difference between right and wrong are. Now, attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs can be changed. Personality can't. But a lot of people get personality confused with attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs. When somebody goes, you know, oh, it's just the way that I am. I can't change that. You know, particularly when they're really rude. You say, that's not a personality trait. Your personality trait isn't that you're really obnoxious. That isn't like when you break down the theories of personality, like Cottrell's 16 personality factors or the big five. Like there's not like is an arsehole to people, like number 12. Like there isn't the obnoxious personality trait. There's openness, agreeableness, neuroticism. There's excitability. There's all these different ones, but not one of them is a knobhead. And so like a lot of people, when they say, oh, it's not my fault, you know, that's my personality. That's not the case at all.
Yeah.
It's not. And they say, oh, I can't change who I am. Yes, you can.
Absolutely you can, yeah.
You absolutely can. And that is a negative belief that's been reinforced. When someone is an arsehole and they say, oh, it's not my fault, it's who I am. Or you see, like, I mean, I see memes for this all the time, like on social media.
Same,
like,
yeah. Say,
I can't change my behavior. Yes, of course you can.
Like, absolutely
like,
can, yeah.
What a ridiculous thing to say. I can't change my behavior. You've been changing your behavior your entire life. Like, you don't act now how you acted when you were 6 months old. You don't just lie on the floor and piss yourself and cry.
That's such a good point.
Like, you are constantly evolving our behaviors. When someone says, I can't change, yes, of course you can. Like, you're doing it right now. We're just asking you to do it consciously. There's a lot of theories and a lot of beliefs about it. And it's actually getting people to sort of break down those preconceived. And like I said, you know, that's one of the main bricks in the wall that they've cemented in place, you know, that they can't change, they won't change, they don't know how to change.
Yeah.
And because they feel like they haven't changed, that's then cemented that brick in place. And then when you actually go, well, you have changed. Of course you have. Like we all do. And,
we all change,
and then
yeah.
you sort of bring that. Yeah. And let's not. And now let's consciously bring about that change. Then you begin to see it. And then when you get to then people to then like really record their journey and then they can see it. And we're seeing that a lot on sort of social media, with people recording their journeys and recording their change. And that's
positive. That.
Yeah, it's really positive because it's proven that you can change. And a lot of people didn't think that they could.
Yeah. And I think like we're like two examples of that. And there's like so many now where people are having like life changing journeys and like experiences. And it's really cool because I think it kind of shows that no matter how like hard your life's been or how kind of low you've been or felt, like there's always a way back and there's always like a way forward.
There's always another way. There's always another choice.
There always is. And that ties in really well with what I asked next. Like resilience for you is such a big thing, isn't it? And I think that goes hand in hand. Like, what does resilience like mean to you? Like, what does it mean? Like, what is it? And how have you kind of conditioned it?
The sort of technical definition you would get is in with mental resilience is the psychological ability to respond to stress and pressure, sort of manage external sources of stress stimuli,
right,
and to manage them effectively. But what does that really mean? For me and what I teach, it's turning surviving into thriving.
Nice.
So creating a sense of homeostasis, a physiological homeostasis, even in a time of great crisis. So you are calm, you are in control, you are focused on what you need to do. You have got a state of homeostasis, slightly elevated, but a state of homeostasis, which is a state of balance within the body. You're calm, in control, you breathe in, on top of your heart rate, you know what you need to do, This is how you're going to do it. You are in a state of homeostasis even when the chips are really down. And be that, obviously I cut my teeth in a military way, so quite like extreme environments, but a really great way of learning how to achieve it. But, you know, from getting people on arduous courses and deployments in Iraq and, you know, the sort of special forces guys doing what they do and getting people to sort of being able to really engage those key psychological skills to achieve that. What's known as allostasis, then which is the brain and body's ability to adapt to stress and pressure, then getting people to achieve that and to manage that effectively was obviously very rewarding. And then sort of taking that into a competitive sports environment and sort of high pressure working environments, things like corporate and banking in London, and some from athletes and rugby players and Paralympians, you're getting those people to then engage it and understand that they are in control. As I said, I'm very much a humanist, so. And letting them know that panic and that fear that overwhelms them, at the end of the day, they're choosing to let that happen. Because it's effectively what's called learned helplessness, where if something
I've
gets
heard
too
of
much,
that, yeah.
Yeah, if something gets too much, it's easier to curl in a ball and go, it's too much.
Yeah.
I can't manage this. Now, I'm not saying for one second that people need to hide their mental health conditions. That's not what I'm saying. Like, people get confused with learned helplessness. Like, always talk out, but always understand that, like, when it comes to management of stress and pressure, when it comes to anxiety and difficulties, like, you can choose coping mechanisms.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's people, don't get me wrong, like, there are people who are clinically diagnosed with like GAD, like general anxiety disorders.
Yeah.
People obviously diagnosed with bipolar and borderline personality, and they falls into a slightly different category of, that's mental ill health. Okay. That's abnormal psychological behavior. But for the vast majority of us who don't necessarily suffer from those, you know, on a daily clinical basis, there is, you can manage stress, you can manage pressure, you can manage your mental wellness far better. And actually, right, resilience falls a lot into mental well-being. And if you don't manage your wellness, then you're going to have to eventually make time for your illness. Like, you have to learn to look after yourself mentally, and that's what I do a lot of teaching of. You know, I get a lot of clients, and sort of the first question I always ask them is, how much water have you drank today? That's sort of horrifying.
Right.
Why would I, you know, why does that matter? Well, because, like, that's a basic need of your body. Like, you need to learn how to look after yourself. Like, what, you know, when was the last time you drank water? You know, how much water have you drank? What do you have for breakfast? Like, what are you doing in your life? Like, I'm a big believer of lifestyle medicine. If you're not eating right and sleeping right and drinking right and looking after your body, it's going to have a really derogatory effect on your mental health.
Definitely.
And that's not my responsibility to fix that. That's your responsibility to take ownership of your health. And once you've done all of those things, then we will sit down and then we'll talk about, like, what are the key psychological skills. One of the main things that I focus on is physical health. Like, you need to be looking after your physical health if you want to look after your mental health. And yet those things go completely, that link almost goes completely ignored.
Yeah, you're right.
Saying, you know, like, oh, you know, it really breaks me. Like, social media can be such a poor reflection when you think about what people are actually posting. When they're like, oh yeah, oh, I've had 2 hours sleep and I've done 80 cups of coffee and I've stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning.
It's not great, is it?
And you're like, and then they want to write something about mental well-being. I'm like, well, what position are you to make any comment on that whatsoever? Like, look at the...
When they're not following it themselves, yeah.
Exactly that. Like, you know, what life is it you choose to lead? So, like, physical and mental health, that ties between them are absolutely incredible, from, like, really sort of clinical neurobiological standpoint of like brain-derived neurotrophic factors that assist the cellular growth in neuroplasticity, to the release of dopamine from exercise and release of serotonin from exercise to the amount of cortisol that is floating around your brain because it's stressed out because you're not feeding yourself properly, you're not hydrated, and you're not sleeping well, you're not healthy. And then you get a stressed brain, you're tired, you're exhausted, you're miserable, and then you're going, oh, I'm depressed, Jim, I'm depressed. I'm like, you're not depressed, you're lazy. Go drink some water. Go eat the correct foods. Go to bed early.
Yeah. It's like the essential basic things, isn't it?
Essential basic things that the human body needs, yeah.
So, like, how have you built up your own resilience? Like, how have you kind of sustained it? Because right now, you seem to be super, like, in that zone. But obviously, from what you said earlier, we know that you haven't always been.
Yeah, I think that through trial and error.
Yeah.
So, you know, things got on top of me. Things got, you know, I had carried a lot of trauma, carried a lot of difficulty. And yeah, I made the humanist choice of I'm just going to explode. I'm going to become violent. I'm going to become difficult. I'm going to smoke constantly. I'm going to drink constantly. I'm going to fight. Got in a lot of fights. I'm going to fight a lot. And and then I began to just choose better. That cognitive dissonance was created by role model theory, where I was looking up to these people who were like really, really brilliant people, really brilliant soldiers, really brilliant leaders of men, and who all just kind of like tearing their hair out at their mate, Jim, who's sort of losing the plot. But they were, you know, and would come and sit with me, and I chose better. And I went through sort of a mental health system. I went outside of the army system and went to a civilian practice and sort of got back on my feet. And, you know, they gave me a lot of tough love. And got back on my feet and then started working on myself a little bit more. And then here we are.
Wow. That is a real journey. Like, would you say that the army was the thing that made you into who you are now?
Yeah, 100%. So I was a nightmare, you know, like really typical backstory of most young soldiers where, you know, I was, you know, a bit of a very sort of rough background, and then sort of, you know, didn't have anything, was in and out of, sort of being homeless and in a lot of trouble with the law. Yeah, and then just decided, you know what, like I'm going to join the army, like I choose better. And I joined the army, and it gave me a platform, and it taught me a sense of morality, and it taught me discipline, and it taught me respecting people, and it taught me the power of a routine, it taught me the power of physical education, taught me how to nutrition myself, how to look after myself. It gave me a sense of pride, gave me a sense of belonging, it gave me a tribe, it gave me a uniform, you know, and it gave me some real friends. And, you know, it completely and utterly changed my life.
Wow. So ultimately then it gave you like a whole new existence then, didn't it?
Without the army, I would have just wound up 100% in prison. 100%. Oh, and I would not be doing this now.
So that, when you think of it like that and where you are now and where you were then, that goes back to what you were saying at the beginning. It's like full circle, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the easiest way to sort of achieve that full circle, if people find themselves in a very difficult situation, is what are you doing in the present that's going to help you in the future?
That's a good question.
So like, what have you done today that's going to guarantee you a better future? Have you applied for a course? Have you read a book? Have you tidied your room? Have you done your meal prep for the week? Have you done your exercise? Have you written down an exercise program? Like, just do one thing today in your present that's going to drastically improve your future. Does it have to be something massive? Does it have to be buy a house? Doesn't have to be become a doctor, but what's the small thing you are doing now that in a day, in 2 days, in a week's time is going to make your life better?
That's such a good point as well, because usually it's the really, really small things that do add up, don't they? And then they create that ripple then that
it is only the small things. And then particularly when you've identified a journey and a route that you want to go on, call it the low-hanging fruit. What's the low-hanging fruit? What, when you can't run a mile, just do the low-hanging fruit of just putting that left foot in front of that right foot. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Just keep doing the low-hanging fruit, because if you do that enough times, you will have walked a mile.
You know, that's a good way of looking at it, yeah, because it makes it doesn't seem so scary then, does it?
But that's the point, isn't it? Like, you can't become a clinical psychologist overnight. It takes 8 years of studies. It's eight years of studies to become a clinical psychologist. But yeah, people don't get on that course, that clinical psychologist course, and sort of just sit in grisly 8 years. Like, they take each day as it comes. Because that's the only way that you can take it, each day, because days turn into weeks, turn into months, turn into years, and turn into a doctorate. So the only way you can do is just by attacking the low-hanging fruits as and when they present themselves to you. And then that takes me back to my original point of committing to those fruits, committing to those opportunities when they are presented to you. Deconstruct the wall that you build in front of you with those negative attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs, and reach for those low-hanging fruits. attack it. Commit yourself to it. Commit your time and your effort to what you want. Otherwise, you will never achieve it.
I love that. And I also love how easy you make it sound. And obviously, it isn't that easy. But I think when you do break it down like that, it just makes you realise what's possible, doesn't it?
But change is painful, right? Change is difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course it is. Look, because and like that cognitive dissonance and that change and that evolution, like throughout all manners of sort of biological studies and humanist studies and studies of history, like change is only ever brought about by great pain and suffering. People like human beings or humanoids left the continent of Africa in search of food.
Mm.
5 million years ago, we emerged from the jungles of Central Africa in search of food, in search of a better life. Like people sailed from Southampton in the Mayflower over to the New World in search of a better life, tired of religious persecution. Like people have gone on these great adventures and have gone and have pushed and have changed and evolved and grown because of great difficulty and great suffering has caused change. Change doesn't just happen. It takes pressure and it takes time. And actually applying that pressure and giving yourself time will allow that change.
And then with change comes the transformation, right?
Right, could change comes transformation, comes the life, comes the fulfillment that that we all deserve.
Hell yes. This has given me all the motivation. I feel like this episode for people is going to be really interesting because you've like covered so many different aspects. Like, how can people find out a bit more about what you spoke about? Because I feel like there'll be a lot of people that want to know more.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so I'm on Instagram as James Elliott Official. And my website is down at the moment because I'm making some amendments to it, but it's going to be back up soon. But yeah, if you want me, get hold of me on my social media, which is James Elliott Official.
Amazing. So I will leave a link in the bio anyway, so people can just access it there.
Awesome. Yeah.
Amazing. I feel like we need to do like a whole new conversation because there's even more avenues we could go down. That was just like probably scratching the surface, really, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, I've got a ridiculous amount of content that we can discuss. But you know, if people enjoy this and people want to hear some more, then we'll get some more availability dates out in the calendar and we'll see what we can do.
Absolutely, we've got to do it. James, thank you so much for joining me. I've absolutely loved it.
Oh, no worries, Zach. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much. And guys, thank you for joining us. New mum, thank you as always, and I'll see you soon. Bye everybody. Hi everyone, thank you so much for listening to a brand new episode of A Slice of Life with me, Jack Walton. Please don't forget to rate, share and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you download your episodes from. Don't forget to follow me on social media. I am Jack Walton and Motivator Boy to keep up to date with everything I've got going on. With thanks to our guest this month, James Elliott, our producer, Callan Danes, and you, the viewer, for listening. See you next month.